I'm going to be present and realize you got one shot at this. You know, this is it. And to me, so goes the dad. So goes the family. You know, so goes the family. So go our churches. So go the churches. So go our communities. And communities lead to what our nation looks like.
Well, welcome back to the Living Sent podcast. I am your host, Justin Wester, and I am so excited that you have tuned into this month's bonus episode. If you are brand new to the podcast, I want to say welcome to you. I release a new episode on the first Wednesday of each month, but sometimes I have a bonus episode that I would like to share, and this is one of those months. This podcast really exists to help Christ followers live like missionaries in their households, their neighborhoods, their workplaces, and their cities. And today, we are talking about one of the most important and often overlooked mission fields, our own homes. And my guest today is Tommy Hendricks. He has a powerful story, really, of redemption, fatherhood, and faith. You know, growing up without his dad, Tommy made a decision early on that when his time came, he was going to do things differently. But before we jump into that, I wanted to say a big thank you to those that consistently are rating and reviewing and sharing this podcast. When you do that, I see you, and I just wanted to say thank you in advance. Continue to do that. It helps to expand the reach of this podcast and bless others. A big, big thank you in advance to those that are doing that and are continuing to do so. And I also wanted to let you know this. As we get started here, every single episode comes with free show notes. And yes, you heard that correct. The show notes are free. They're made with you in mind to get them. All you need to do is head over to my website at justinwester.com, navigate to the podcast tab, and you can download them there for free. They will always be free. And they're packed with resources. They've got links and discussion questions and obviously a transcript, but so much more. And if you choose to use them, you could use them in a variety of ways. For your own personal study, or if you're leading a team or a small group at your church, this is perfect for that as well. Be sure to pick up your free show notes. You know, really, in today's conversation, Tommy's going to share how that conviction to be the dad shaped his life as a husband and a father of seven children, how he built intentional rhythms of faith in his home, like breakfast devotions and Tuesday night family nights, and how really those small, consistent moments have transformed generations. You're going to hear about his journey from being a kid without a dad to leaving a legacy of faith, and how you too can make practical steps to be the dad your family needs you to be. So whether you are driving to work right now, or doing the dishes, or catching your breath between parenting moments, I know this episode is going to encourage you and equip you to live sent, starting right where you are. Here's my interview with Tommy Hendricks. All right. Well, Tommy, thanks so much for being here. I'm excited to have you share a little bit. You know, the purpose of the podcast is really to help Christ followers live like missionaries. I say every month in the household, the neighborhood, the workplace, and their city. And so what I think you have to share is directly related to that. And I think listeners are going to get a lot of value out of this conversation. So I kind of wanted to start by asking you this. You know, you've got an interesting fatherhood journey. And I was wondering, really, at what point did you start to realize just how important the role of dad is within the home?
Yeah. So when I grew up, my dad left when I was 2 years old. My mom and dad split. Lots of reasons, but he just chose to leave for another person, if you will, and left the state. Left my mom with four kids. So we had about age seven, five. I was two, my little sister one. So grew up basically not knowing my dad, didn't meet him until I was 20. And it was somewhere in there, really in high school, college. I really honestly had a passion. I looked forward to getting married. And my mom always said that he's the one missing out. And so that just kind of stuck with me that, you know, one day I'll get the chance to be the dad. And never held a grudge, you know, never upset. Didn't think about it a lot. All I could think about was one day it'll be my turn. And what will I do with my kids? So that was part of my motivation, start from a young age, is that I couldn't wait to get married and to be a dad and do some dad things with my kids.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I know that a lot of guys that grow up either without a dad, or maybe there's a dad there, but he's just an absent dad. A lot of times men specifically look to someone, for better or worse, to guide them kind of along their masculine journey? Like, looking back, who would you say that mm-hmm. person was for you?
Well, we moved in when they split. We moved back in with her, my grandparents. So I had a great granddad. My grandpa and my grandma, very active in the church, deacon, leader. And so basically he was my role model. And he also was a disciplinarian. So he's the one that actually spanked us. So it was kind of funny. You know, they basically raised two rounds of kids.
Yeah.
Had a great uncle. He was a good influence. But by far, my grandpa was basically my dad. And looked up to him a lot, learned a lot from him. And he was a good man. And, you know, for me, that was great motivation.
Yeah. So you said they were taking you guys to church on a regular basis, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we went every Sunday, every Wednesday. They had the keys. If the doors were open, they opened them. And our small town church, we grew up with two pastors. Basically, in high school, we had a new pastor about middle school. He had a son, and we hit it right off. We were best buds, grew up playing basketball and sports together, but hung out at the pastor's house all the time. Mm-hmm. They fed me at least once or twice a week over there. And Brother Bob was his name, and the Glasgow family, gigantic role models for many kids. But matter of fact, our youth group, we probably ran, you know, like 10 kids on a good day. And four of us became ministers out of that group. A couple still going today around that hometown in Fairfax, Oklahoma. But, you know, I was one of those that definitely called to ministry through high school, knew what I was going to do in college, and here we are still in full-time ministry.
Yeah. So after high school, you started doing something where you traveled a lot, and was it called the Home Mission Board? Now it's called North American Mission Board. What were you doing with them?
Yeah, so they had a branch that kind of was their missions agency that went to colleges, churches, and basically acting as promoted missions. And so we were a creative arts team. We would sing, we'd do shows. I juggled. We had a little bit of everything, a little creative arts program. And we would do shows. And at the end, we'd always have a call for people to sign up to be missionaries. And so that was, they put us on the road. This team I was on was 1 year solid on the road.
Wow.
So I was the director. There were six other students, college age, and they gave us a big old budget. I got to go buy the van, the trailer off the lot. We loaded it up. We trained for a couple of weeks, and we hit the road. We lived 1 year solid on the road that year.
And so was that immediately after high school?
Well, after high school, no. I went to college.
Okay.
And after college, I signed up to be a missionary through the Home Mission Board, is what it was called back then.
Yeah.
And so I did 2 years at different places like San Diego. I was in Iowa, Charleston, South Carolina. The third year, the option was to lead this team.
Yeah.
Called Missions USA, and I took it. And matter of fact, that's how I met my wife. So we were picking people to be on this team, and people sent in VHS tapes.
What is that?
It's this big box thing you put in a machine that plays videos. But literally, there were about 13 girls and a handful of guys that were auditioning. We were picking three and three. Three guys, three girls. I was sitting in a dorm room in Charleston, South Carolina, when I was watching these videos, and the supervisor said, you just watch them. You tell me which three you think you want and go from there. As soon as Joe, my wife, popped up on that video, it was like the Lord tapped me on the shoulder and said, that's your wife.
Wow.
Never seen her, never heard her name. Watched the video, and obviously she did make the team. Yeah. I did pick her, and by the end of that year, we were married.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. So missions pays off sometimes. That's right. No, always.
So fast forward. You guys obviously must have served together on mission. Was it called Mission USA?
Yeah, Mission USA.
So how long did y'all serve together and then start your family? What was the timeline there?
Yeah, so supposedly one of the rules on the team was no dating.
Okay.
But we didn't say we were dating. We just got engaged, got married.
Nice.
So skip the dating. We were on the road for one solid year. We did 26 states, like 50,000 miles. I mean, it was from a kid for Oklahoma. I didn't leave Oklahoma until I was like 16. I'd never get out of the state.
Wow.
So I couldn't wait to travel. So this opportunity to do missions all over the U.S., I loved it. But at the end of that year, we got married. And I remember she's from Florida, so I'm from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. We met in Georgia. We got married, moved to Ohio. And I believe that's the normal route for most couples.
Yeah.
But that was about, you know, so I'd been out of college 3.5 years. She was already still in college, hadn't finished yet. And so we ended up in Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio. She finished her degree. And when she walked across the stage to graduate, she was 9 months pregnant with our first child.
Wow.
So 2 weeks later, our first kid was born. And that began at least that side of our family.
Yeah, yeah. So I know for me, with our first, his name's Aiden, the whole experience was just like a roller coaster ride in a lot of ways. I was at the hospital for days, and we had Aiden in Virginia when we lived there. And I was up there for maybe 2-3 days before they let us go home. And I remember, you know, they asked me, they said, "Hey, go get the car, bring it around. We'll escort your wife down there and your son down there. We'll meet you at the bottom and you guys can head out." And I remember probably like so many guys, like the sensation that you have as you're driving away. You know how to drive a car, you know who's with you, but like there's a weight, you know, that you have, and kind of like a realization where you're like, they just let us go. And yeah. Now this person is in our life and we have a responsibility now to care for them. Did you experience something similar? I mean, was it like as big of a rush as it was for me?
It was really surreal. I mean, we were leaving the hospital, walking to the car, thinking nobody goes with us. Mm-hmm. You know, this is it. You know, we get in the car, and somehow on our first birth experience, we lost a giant birth ball. And I'm looking everywhere. It's not in the car. It's not in the hospital. That's all I remember is, where did this birth ball thing go? But we got in the car, drove home, and basically went into our bedroom. We had the crib right by our bed, and here we go.
Yeah.
Day one was like, okay, we got this. So, and that's how we started.
So you've got 7 children, correct?
Yeah, that was the first of many of those experiences.
Yeah.
Funny story, though. We were in Blockbuster when her water broke with the first kid. And it was late at night. I looked at my wife and said, "Babe, do I go ahead and rent these? What do I do?" We didn't know. We didn't know how long it was going to be. And she said, "Yeah, go ahead and get them just in case." I don't think I got to finish both of them. It was the middle of the night when the first one started, and there we go. But we had our first 4 back to back to back. I mean, with my oldest, Joe, he was 4. And when we had the 4th kid.
Wow.
So 4, 3, 2, and 1, basically. Just boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
But we're looking back, you know, we didn't have our first one until I was 29, turning 30.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'd have known I was going to have that many, I wish we'd have got started a little early,
sure.
Earlier in life.
Yeah.
But no, our motto was 4 and no more. And we felt crazy blessed, you know, just to have 4 kids. And that was it. So I'll tell you a crazy story in the middle of that. It's in the book, but... You know, we had agreed to have 4 kids, and that was it. We shook hands, and I said, "Well, babe, if you want to do something permanent, you know, to make this happen, that's up to you."
Yeah.
And so I said, "You're going to have to drive me. You're going to have to make the appointment. You're going to have to go do all this if we do that, the vasectomy thing." So she did. So we were done. Went and had it done. And about 2 years later, she comes back and says, I think we closed the door we shouldn't have closed." And she was really struggling with it. I was fine. I was like, "Well, you made me do it. That was my excuse. This was your thing, not mine." But evidently, it can be reversed.
Yeah.
Didn't know that at the time. I really didn't. And so she prayed for about a year of going back and forth. And finally, she did one out. And actually took a trip from here, Florida, to Oklahoma. It was a little secret trip I took to have this done. And long story short, we had 3 more kids.
Wow.
So I went with 2 other guys. None of those guys had any kids, but mine, I guess it worked, and there we were.
Wow.
So there's my instant family of 7 kids just like that, but I couldn't be more blessed, you know, especially the path that my kids are on, doing amazing. And the book is really about some testimonies and stories that I took from other dads and other people that said, you know, I think there are some concrete things you can do as a dad to at least point your kids to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Can't guarantee it, you know, they're going to make their own choice, but you can go out of your way to make sure that they're at least headed in the right direction.
Absolutely. Yeah, so looking back on those years too, it's like, how do you think you have changed over that time? Like, how do you think you've led your family differently over the years?
Well, I think a couple things. First is my wife and I, we've always said our marriage has got to be first. You know, obviously our relationship with Christ, but we always said kids come second, and we told them that all the time. So we'd have to lock the door, we'd push them out, whatever, you know, because the marriage has got to come first. We kept telling them that one day you guys will be gone, and then we'd take the normal route here, Mom and I will still be here together. And so we're always going to take care of our relationship. But then past that, you know, I was in ministry. I've been on church staff about 30 years. So it was easy to have a picture of what a pastor family should look like, mm-hmm. but it's not as easy to do that. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, PK kids, you know, for the most part, seems like don't come out as well as a regular kid, if you will. But we set some pretty high goals, and, you know, and I carried that burden. I didn't put that on her. I was like, you know, we're going to do things like family time. We're going to be involved in missions. We're going to take family mission trips. We're going to have the morning devos. So some of that stuff that I list in the book, you know, those things to me, guys basically said, you know, if you want to plan to make something happen, you've got to have some action steps. Yeah. So those became my action steps, put them on the calendar. I led those, didn't put it on her. And honestly, some of the stuff that we started with kid one, we still do today. That's with cool. the three kids left in our house.
That's awesome. Yeah, after reading the book, one of the things that I can tell that you're really passionate about is intentional time with your family, specifically like around the morning hours, breakfast time. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of give us a little bit of like the inside look as to what that time looks like with you guys? Because I know you're the breakfast guy. I'm the breakfast guy in my family too. But what does that look like for y'all?
And I realize that not every family has a structure where you can get up and do breakfast together. You know, some guys got to get out of the house early. But for us, you know, that 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock time has been consistent over the years, literally since day one. And so when I was on the team, missions team, we were traveling through Colorado, and I stayed the night with the pastor and his family. And in the morning, he said, hey, I want you guys to get up and have breakfast with us. And so literally he knocked on the door, got us up, me and a kid named Brian that was on the team. It's like, we didn't really want breakfast, and we wanted to sleep in. We had a show that night. But I'm so glad I got out of bed. Mm. Went to this guy's table. I think they had three kids, his wife, big old breakfast on the table. And they had a morning routine that it was obvious that they did this every morning and before they went out the door. So they read some scripture. They had little missionary prayer cards. They talked through the day. They looked at the calendar. And it was amazing. I was blown out of the water what this dad did with his family. I remember telling Brian that day when we went back to our room, I was like, someday when I have a family, that's what it's going to look like. And literally, if you'd come to my table this morning, it would look like just like what that guy did as an example for me. So we do something similar. We keep cards that anybody sends us from Christmas, a birthday card. We have a box. We put them in there. And then we have there's an app now called the Bless app. And the Bless app kind of maps your street out and does your neighborhood. And then we have some kind of scripture. And then our last thing we add is the World Magazine. The World Magazine has these videos. It's a 10-minute video. Hmm. And so we've changed some, you know, things we do over the years, but we've always kept in breakfast, you're going to wake up, you're going to come to the table, we're going to have a family time. We've read through the Bible several times, just little scriptures at a time in the morning. Yeah. We've watched video series, and then we always take a card out of the box. We pray for that family. Something kind of neat that does for our kids is we have people in our past they don't know. Yeah. So who's that family from Ohio, or we were in Tennessee for a while, and that's kind of a unique way to get them to remember, oh, that's who that is. That's what they mean to us. Yeah. And then through the Bless app, one of our desires is really to be an outreach in our neighborhood. And we have been crazy blessed in the last few years. We do movie nights. We've done concerts in our front yard, host neighborhood events, and we probably have 6-7 families on our street that go to our church now. We didn't do much other than just open our door and invite them. Yeah. So that's been really cool. But that morning time for our family, you know, I think for our kids, what I wanted to do is make it normal so that one day when they have kids and have a family, that's something normal you're supposed to do is have some quality breakfast time with your family, prayer time before you go out that door to start your day.
That's good. You know, I know for a lot of dads, too, that like I mentioned earlier, maybe they didn't grow up with a dad that was really invested or really present or really trying to lead in any sort of intentional way in their life. And so when they hear that men should be the spiritual leader of their home, I think one of two things happens. They have no idea what that means or looks like, or they also could be just terrified at the sound of that. You know, they're like, I don't think I know how to do that. I don't think I know how to begin. Like, how would you coach a person through that if they were just starting out, no exposure, no experience? Where do I start?
Well, I definitely say it's always better to start early. You know, if you've got young kids, you know, you should start now. The older your child gets, the harder it's going to be to start new routines. Mm-hmm. So I was encouraged from a young age when our kids were just born. You know, one thing I did is I had a little Bible in my rocker, and I read the complete book to my first two children just as I rocked them. But again, I wanted to do that as dad, not mom. And then the breakfast thing, we do Tuesday night family time, and that's really why I wrote the book, because I really wanted to encourage dads who say, well, I don't even know what to do. Where do I start? Mm-hmm. So I just put ideas in the book, say, hey, here's what has helped us. This is what I've seen some other guys do. So things like the breakfast morning time, Tuesday night's been our family night since we've had kids. We still do it today. We have Tuesday night family night. You know, obviously church is a part of that. Yeah. And then we do annual goals. So it might be a mission trip. You know, it might be something big, a cruise, something we want to do as a family. And so we try to place high value, put them on the calendar. And I have told my wife, she would say the same thing, that I will lead these. You don't have to do this. And I see it as the dad's job to lead. When I say lead spiritually, that's what I'm talking about. It's just kind of routines, good traditions, and habits that you do. And you don't see giant change, you know, from one family time. Mm-hmm. But when you do it for 3, 4, 20 plus years, you know, I think that's in them for life.
Yeah.
And that's my whole goal. Is I've got four boys, I've got three girls, is that I want my sons and my daughters to think this is normal. Mm-hmm. It's normal to read the Bible in your house. It's normal to have conversations. It's normal to have traditions that talk about God, not just, you know, Thanksgiving and opening gifts.
Right. Well, I know too, like a lot of, if anybody's listening and they've done any sort of, you know, studies on, you know, men's studies or masculinity journeys, that sort of thing, two words like pop up consistently, like protect and provide. And you talk a lot about protecting the family unit, and it was really interesting seeing what you wrote there. And I wanted to ask you, just in terms of protecting your family, you mentioned a lot of things that you really started to investigate and put some parameters around. Could you explain like how you went about that and how you basically led your kids to see that as, hey, this is important? Like, we need to have some barriers in place and not just have unfiltered media and, you know, whatever else coming into this house. Like, what did that look like for you guys?
Yeah, I'm 54 years old. So I'm older than my kids by a generation, in the sense that we didn't have a lot of stuff we have now that sure. when I grew up as a kid. So the internet, phones, you know, those weren't even options. So when this stuff is coming out and my kids are growing up, somebody has to be, you know, the principal mm-hmm. of the house. And so that was going to be me. So we did things like we got rid of the TV for years. That was a family night. And I remember, I think we had four at the time, when we carried that thing out the door, they literally thought, Dad has lost his mind. This is nuts. But, you know, we went 3 or 4 years without it.
Yeah.
And everybody would say we're better off. Now we have one today. But things like that to say, you know what, if we feel like something's going to distract us, you know, you use the word boundaries, I use the word hedges. Mm-hmm. You know, that I think for men especially, it's your house, it's your property, it's your kids. You know, I think I want to safeguard them. I'm not going to shelter them from the world. They're going to see stuff, and they're going to have friends, and they're going to learn things from other people right down the street. But at least in our house, we want an environment where it's just not going to be, you know, green light to do whatever. Mm-hmm. And so filters on phones, limited access to video games, whatever that may mean, even walking through the house, you know, we would just make sure the stuff on the walls, anything in our house, we'd say, you know, we want, when people come here, we just want this to be a safe haven for people to say, hey, here's a house, here's a home that obviously honors God. And, you know, I don't want to be overly strict about it. I just want to be protective about it. Mm-hmm. And so I always thought, you know, people say, well, you kids should be missionaries at schools or wherever they go. I thought, well, there's got to be some training first. Mm-hmm. And so before we launch them out of the house, how about we give them at least a good start before they're going to go against this world?
Yeah.
And that's personal, too, for me as well. So I've always tried to do a good job of building hedges around my life from things I see, places I go. You know, I view it as the fire. I know we're old enough. I know I can handle it, but I don't want to go near the fire. If I go near the fire, eventually I'm going to get burned.
For sure. For sure. Well, how old is your oldest now?
So our kids range from 25 down to sixth grade. So just turned 12. And honestly, I just feel crazy blessed that the top four kids so far out of the house are all in some form of ministry.
Wow.
And so as I look back, I see, you know, it's not me, it's just God working in their life. But I feel like everything that we did encouraged them, showed them that ministry's fun, showed them that, you know, you have gifts, use them to serve God. So my oldest son, you know, runs church camps, been doing that for years. My daughter's a teacher, you know, church preschool. I've got my kid number three is a nurse, but takes nursing mission trips. Mm-hmm. And my kid number four, you know, he's in college, but he's leading Bible study almost every night.
That's awesome.
You know, and just you hear things and you think, wow, God, that's too good. You've been too good to me. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
And even the bottom three now are all leaning that way. And that's been my whole goal, is I just want to expose them to opportunities for ministry. Say, man, you can be used by God in whatever career you choose, but that's going to be your first calling in life.
Yeah. I'm just curious, have you ever asked them about, you know, their upbringing and said, you know, what did you think about the breakfast times? What did you think about family nights? What did you think about the trips that we took? Like, what would they say was like their favorite part of their childhood?
Yeah, a few times through our church has asked us to make videos, mm-hmm. when we promote things. One of those is scripture memory. And so we have a ministry called Mega Verses that we take songs, straight scripture, put them to song and help people memorize scripture. Our kids made the video. We didn't. But they're the ones saying, like, oh, yeah, we grew up singing these songs. We grew up doing this. Matter of fact, the oldest kids made a video about what breakfast time meant. And the video's made. It's already out there. And they remember Tuesday night family nights. Far as I can tell, they enjoyed them and had fun. And those are good memories, not like they're being forced to do something. It's just what our family did.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I know we're kind of getting close on time, but I did have a question for you just about, you know, I know you're still in the thick of it too with leading your kids, but there's probably some dads that are looking back and they're saying, you know, I had those opportunities. All my kids are out of the house now. And I still want to be a part of their life. Like, do you have any encouragement for them? Like, how would they go about being intentional with their new stage of life? The kids aren't necessarily under the roof, but they're still in contact with them. How do they begin being intentional at this stage?
You know, I was 35-ish when Facebook came out, somewhere in that neighborhood. And that's one of the reasons I reconnected with my dad. Mm-hmm. And so I found him on Facebook. We started talking. And we actually drove and met them at Thanksgiving and got to reconnect with him. So you ask about older dads or people who their kids are gone. I was glad that my dad had that moment. That, you know, he got to re-know us, see my kids, came to our wedding, you know, out of the blue, and now knows our kids and we have a relationship. I think where any dad is, whether your kid's, you know, in good standing or maybe it's difficult, you can always start over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can ask forgiveness, you can start a relationship new, and you've always got round two if you've got grandkids coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I encourage any dad that it's not too late. You know, so whether you've got grown children or you've got grandkids coming, still be involved. You know, I mentioned about my grandpa, you know, one of the most influential men in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and he thought he was done, you know, raising kids. So I would say it's never too late to start. And for me, I've had several men throughout the life my journey that were great examples. So not having the dad to me was never an excuse,
mm-hmm.
to do the right thing. So I've seen other people do it. I can do this. Matter of fact, what I did with Be the Dad, this book, is I took a group of about 20 dads when I first wrote it, and we did a chapter a week encouraging them on how to pray for your family,
mm-hmm.
how to do breakfast time, how to do a family night, how to plan your annual calendar. And that legacy, that was 2010, I believe, when we did that first group. And, you know, those are now a generation of kids that have grown up and gone.
Mm-hmm.
And my prayer is that you think generational. So I've got a family tree. My thought is I wanted to change my family tree from what I grew up on. And I can't wait for the day to see that when my kids do some of these things to train their children,
mm-hmm.
to know him, love him, and serve him. So that's it's great. Never too late. You know, just start now. There's thousands of resources. I mean, you just Google home devotions, you Google family time, it's all there. You don't have to make up anything. You can borrow and steal from other people and start your journey.
That's right.
But I just feel blessed, you know, encouraging, and anything I can do to help dads, I'm there, man.
Awesome. Well, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to mention, either about the book or your journey or just last 2 cents to throw in?
Yeah, I think one quick story. The biggest one for me was meeting my dad. And because, you know, I went 18 years, 19 years, whatever, with not a picture, not a visual, anything, no memory. And he was traveling through Oklahoma one time and called us out of the blue, said, hey, if you guys want to meet, I'd love to meet. And I said yes. And the four of us weren't going to go unless all four said yes. And my little sister, well, little, she's 18 at the time, was home from college. She didn't want to go. But we went and picked her up, and we went anyway. So we drove, and we met him. And that 3 or 4 hours was pretty life-changing for me.
Wow.
Because it really hammered home for me, hey, some dads end up in this spot, and they don't know how they got there. And so, you know what? I'm going to be the best dad I can be, whether I know my kids to death or what. But I'm going to be active in their life. I'm going to be present and realize, you got one shot at this. You know, this is it. And to me, so goes the dad, so goes the family. You know, so goes the family, so go our churches. So go the churches, so go our communities, and communities lead to what our nation looks like. So if we're in a bad situation, you know, where you live or even think nationally, it's because of men. It's because men have not done what they're supposed to do in the house first. So if you do it in your home, you're more likely to do it out in public. So that's my encouragement, is just, you know, be the dad, step up to the plate. You don't have to be perfect. You know, just be there. Just spend time with your kids and live Christ in front of them and pray to God that they do the same. And then we're dead and gone one day, our kids and grandkids will still be doing things they're supposed to be doing to honor the Lord.
Awesome. Hey, well, the book is called Be the Dad Your Family Needs You to Be, and I'll have a link to it in the show notes. And again, Tommy, just thank you so much for your work and your example, and I appreciate you being on today.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Man, what a great conversation. I just wanted to say I love getting to do what I do, and I love Tommy's heart for the family and how he's taken what could have been a story really of loss and turned it into a story of legacy. If you want to learn more, be sure to grab his book. It's called Be the Dad. I'll have a link into the show notes where you can go directly to his site and pick up one there. And remember, your greatest mission field might just be around your breakfast table. You know, the way you love, the way you lead, and the way you point your family towards Jesus matters more than you know. Hey, thanks again for listening to this month's Living Sent podcast. If this episode encouraged you, would you take just a moment to leave a review or share it with another dad or friend who needs this reminder? Until next time, I always like to sign off by saying this: you don't have to live sent, you get to. We'll see you next time.